Rolling on 5 o'clock hour, John Von Tobel back for a show today here on Cofield & Company. Teo's helping out. Mon's back in the Finley Toyota studios. 42-31 now. The Heat with a double rejection on that one, but the Heat lead it against the Bulls that one. That replay as the Bulls player was going in to try a layup. 4 minutes left in the first half. What are you seeing so far?
Miami, as they are affectionately known on NBA Twitter, the Zombie Heat, doing what they do. Which is, yeah, our best player's out, so we're just going to play really good defense and lock teams down. And that's exactly what they're doing, but their offense still stinks. So they missed their last 9 shots. See if they can extend this lead back out. But I think they're going to win this game. I did lay 1.5 with them, so I'm hoping they do. But it's going to be tough next round.
Wanted to come out of the gates in the 5 o'clock hour just mentioning a couple things about college sports and the NIL. And it's not some big rant, just some news and notes, because as I was showing you before the we started, John, in our rundown, I had about 17 stories from transfer portal stuff and college basketball and college football that I've been cataloging all week, and we just haven't gotten to it. So we'll do some of that next week. I also don't think it's that important to Las Vegas, but I do have to mention a couple of stories because the portal is so busy for college basketball right now. There's like 1,700 players in. Obviously, so much of this is about money until they have some way of coming up with some rules and some limitations, and I don't know that there can be legally limitations. So now we're seeing more boosters and supporters of the programs kind of backing up the Brinks truck, and we're hearing crazy numbers for basketball. You know, put together a basketball roster, here you go, here's a $2 million budget. We had a report by Jeff Goodman about a month ago about, he said 6 schools in the Big East had recruiting budgets, NILs, of over $2 million. I don't entirely believe that, but there's big money. And you've already seen in the portal, the parochial schools are killing it, which means they have budgets. Like Xavier is killing it. We were told a couple of weeks ago by, just as a reference point, by the way, the money numbers are coming out more and more. Yesterday, Boise lost their second best player, who is returning in Chibuzo Abo, who plays the wing, 14 points a game. And B.J. Raines was on with us, and he said, hey, sources told me he's got a $500,000 offer. That's for a Mountain West 14-point-per-game guy who might be the third or fourth option on a Power 4 team, $500,000.
Yep.
We had a Seton Hall expert on when UNLV was playing Seton Hall before the game, and we actually got on the subject of my school. They had a good center. Cliff Amore, right, who's a great rebounder, shot blocker, like 10 points per game, but like a good, you know, protect the rim guy,
sure,
as an extra option to build your roster. He had heard a month ago it's going to be about $700,000.
Nice.
So, and Georgetown's in on him, so that means Georgetown's got a budget now where that's not the most important guy they're going to get, but they can spend $700,000 on a player.
Right.
Whoa. Kansas just got a guy yesterday, A.J. Storrs. St. John's to Wisconsin. I think it was Gottlieb who mentioned yesterday that he had gotten $250,000 at Wisconsin, left. Not enough. Rumor mill had it about 2 weeks ago. Kansas was offering $750,000. I want $1 million.
Got it?
Committed to Kansas. I don't know if he got it.
I was told
by our Kansas friends that Kansas doesn't spend to that level. I think Kansas tells our Kansas friends.
I was going to say, I think they believe a lot.
I think they're lying.
We do it the right way. We actually offered him $10 in a sandwich, and he just wanted to come be part of Big Blue Nation or whatever we call ourselves nowadays. I'm shocked
it's
that
crazy.
Wisconsin paid him that little. I would figure that Wisconsin would have a little bit more to offer.
Well, they got him for a year, and he averaged 18 points a game, and then he was like, he actually played at your school at Gorman for a year, and he was like, man,
right,
payday time. And while people, again, portray this as the kids are not loyal, all they care about is money, then the school should stop spending the money. That's how you turn it off. If the kid didn't think that $250,000 now was laughable, then he wouldn't leave.
Right.
Right. Or he thought, yeah, if he thought $250,000 was a good number, he wouldn't leave. But he knows there's two teams out there that are going to offer a lot more. Damon, you saw it in your home state, Memphis. We know they have a big backer in FedEx. I mean, this is a public deal they talked about. How big was the money?
$5 million annually, but this is going to be spread across football, basketball, and women's basketball.
A group of five. $25 million for 5 years. Group of five.
Yep.
And by the way, that doesn't mean it's all – and technically that's not NIL. because it's going to the school.
Right.
But we're talking about that kind of support. And maybe part of it is maybe Memphis, and this might be why a lot of this stuff is said publicly, maybe Memphis is kind of shooting a shot and going, over here, hey, Big 80, right? There's going to be 80 schools who are in.
Yep.
And then outside of 80, you got to relegate and win your way in. Maybe Memphis is holding their hands up and going, we're in. $25 million from a sponsor. We're in. We're showing dedication.
I mean, they should. Right? You want to get in. If you're left on the outside, it's going to be tough living.
Well, there's going to be a chance to play your way up. But you do want to be in that 70 to 80 to start.
100%, yeah.
Memphis.
Yes.
And by the way, Memphis basketball is in a home-and-home series with UNLV starting next year. Starting this season, so. Home-and-home basketball.
Oh, yeah. Similar bankrolls, too, for both teams.
I mean, UNLV does have a bankroll. I don't know that they have a FedEx-type backer. Now, in the old days, money-wise, did they?
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of the casino friends are a little more at arm's length versus what, you know, used to be. But here's the thing, and I mentioned it. I'll tell the story a billion times. When Jim Boeheim was crapping all over Miami and saying, Miami is buying their whole roster, that was Jim Boeheim telling you, I don't have any money anymore because my backers don't trust me.
Yep.
You get money if you win. The spigot is turned wide open. Hose to the face.
Nah, they never did that.
Who, UNLV?
No, Jim Boeheim and
Of course they did.
No.
The whole Big East did.
The right
or
way.
Most of it did. That's to keep up with the Joneses, you got to keep up with them money-wise. You got to spend to that level. I'll give you another thing. It's gotten so competitive for players that Duke had a pretty good returning crew along with the number one recruiting class in the country, led by DeMond, you still think that Cooper Flagg is the number one?
Oh, 1,000%.
Okay, I'd argue with that, but I'm not objective. Duke has a top recruiting class, four guys in the top 20, led by the number one player. They had some veteran returnees. I mean, it is a perfect blend. The players who were at Duke, they all left. You're like, what's going on here? Not all of them, but Mark Mitchell, who's a good player, former five-star recruit, he left. You know where he's going? Missouri. The same Missouri that, 2 years ago, Dennis Gates with someone else's players made a run, made the NCAAs. Last year, they were winless.
They stunk.
In the SEC.
Yep.
And this guy is giving up Duke, which is pretty much guaranteed to go to at least the Sweet 16 and be a top 20 team. He's like, screw it, man. Moolah.
I mean, this is...
I'm not mad.
No, of course not.
But I see certain places and I'm like, they're losing players? What?
But it's the same thing we're seeing in the coaching ranks, too, because there's so much money now. When you're talking about leaving head coaching positions for position coaching jobs and vice versa, or assistant jobs, right? Like, there's so much money. You're like, yeah, I'll take a step down. Sure. I'll take this cash.
Give me $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million to be a coordinator. I was making, you know, four, like Chip Kelly from UCLA to Ohio State, and he doesn't want the headaches of being a head coach.
Yeah.
Hell yes. What was it? I'm going to screw up his name. Jeff Hafley? Is that his name? Who was that BC head coach? He's like, I'll go be the – I mean, it's a good job. He's going to be the DC in Green Bay.
And what's, who's the USC linebackers coach now? Right? There was a former head coach left for a position coach job.
He was at North Dakota State, which is the best school in FCS.
Just like, sorry, no, I'll coach linebackers.
Head coach, nope.
Because there's just so much money. And it's all the same thing but just at different levels.
Yeah.
And so when there's this much money in the pot and you're just like, you know what? Like, sure, I can play for Duke and have all these expectations and whatnot, but Missouri – they're offering me a lot more money, and I can still be really good and put everything on film, except I'll just make more money, and I'll just go play with Mizzou and stink. All right, cool. I would do it.
Your NBA convo a couple minutes ago with Patrick Berbert, you were talking about the Knicks and Sixers series. I'm supposed to bet who? By the numbers?
I don't know. I'm conflicted. I'm torn.
Because I bet the Knicks.
That's this. If I were to pick a side.
But then you told me what the number was. Was that number available?
The pick?
Bucks minus 160.
Well, you're saying Knicks and Bucks.
Sorry. Wrong one. Sixers. I thought Patrick said it opened at Sixers minus 160. Was that available?
I didn't see that.
Could I have gotten the Knicks with like plus 130 for the series?
Yes, you could have gotten that. So, like, I know he threw out the number, like he was talking to folks that maybe it was going to open over $2. I never saw that opener. We did see an opener of about minus 160, minus 150, and that has since moved to the Fed now that we're at pick with this series. Because I don't think it moved so much because of the close game against Miami. It was more about Joel Embiid just not really looking great. I'm amazed by this series. This might be my favorite series to watch outside of this Clippers-Mavericks series.
Why?
Well, because first off, Jalen Brunson, if anybody hasn't watched him, and everybody does because everybody watches New York, he's been absolutely incredible this year. He's been brilliant. His last 16 regular season games, he's averaging like 35 points on 50% shooting. He's been nuts. So you get him, who's like on this massive tear, to take on a Philadelphia team that's got their best player maybe half injured. They're going to go at it all the time because obviously they're going to put him in pick and rolls and try to go after that drop coverage. And they have OG Anunoby when he's on the floor. They're incredible. So, like, this dynamic of what's going to happen here. By the way, they also have home court because they're the two seed. They've won 50 games. Like, this whole dynamic at play, it's a fascinating series. And I think the Knicks are going to win. I don't feel, like, super strong about it, but I think it'll be the Knicks.
Well, I'm in a good position here because if the Knicks win, I win money. If the Knicks lose, I win.
Right, we get to make fun of the Knicks.
Exactly, and their fans.
And J-Lo.
And I guess Becky Hammon can fire some stuff out on Twitter and tell Knicks fans once again to shut the hell up. A team led by a small guy like that can't win a title.
No.
Yeah, he is awesome, though.
Oh, dude, he's been so good. By the way, I mean, it's old hat now, but it is still funny. He was willing to take a small extension with Dallas. and the Mavericks were like, no, we're good. And now look at him. He's so good. And they've changed things. Like, the cool thing about it is, you know, and they're still a good defensive team. But if you think about Tom Thibodeau teams, right, you're thinking about, like, hard-nosed defensive teams. Yeah, they're 10th. They're 7th in offense this year. They bomb away from three. They're good at shooting threes. Like we mentioned, we've seen a limited sample size of Anunoby, and he has looked absolutely awesome. With him on the floor, they have a plus 33.3 net rating, or, in other words, they outscore opponents by 33 points every 100 possessions with OG Anunoby on the floor.
Wow.
They're great. They're so much fun to watch. And, like, they're, dare I say, a little disrespected. The king of the New York haters.
The whole thing this week, right, Damon? With Perkins going at Barkley and Shaq to start the week. Perkins goes on with Michael Kay, and Kay's like, hey, Barkley and Shaq think the Knicks are going to get booted pretty quickly. And then Perkins comes back. He's like, clearly they don't watch basketball. And then they come back, and they sort of subtweeted verbally. By ripping him, but
don't tell me I don't watch film.
Yeah, by not mentioning his name.
Kendrick Perkins has a lot of moments in which it has kind of shown that he also does not watch. So,
all you got to do is watch more than them.
Does he? Yes. Say it again, Devon.
All he's got to do is watch more than them. That's
not
low bar to clear, but
yes, especially Barkley.
That's a good point.
And as we found out, unfortunately. I shouldn't take a shot at him. Stephen A. wasn't up to the second updated.
On the Knicks?
On the Knicks. That was bad.
You mean when he was talking about Quentin Grimes, Detroit Pistons guard?
By the way, you didn't have to be updated up to the second on that one either.
No.
It's been a little while.
Or talk about Isaiah Hartenstein's production off the bench, even though he's been starting since Mitchell Robinson got hurt like 6 months ago.
Hartenstein. Nevada.
Yeah. I'm watching Isaiah Hartenstein. Producing off of the bench. Hey, man, you can't all be winners. I mean, I think actually
he does too much.
Yes,
stuff.
I also, in his defense of that clip, I think it's easy to kind of confuse Miles McBride and Quentin Grimes. You know, single digit jerseys and whatnot. You know, I think there's probably something there that maybe he just got them mixed up.
Okay.
And at the beginning of the season and last year, Hartenstein did come off the bench. So, you know, maybe he's saying coming off of the bench because he was off the bench at the beginning of the year, you know? I'm sticking up for him.
Okay. We had Dustin Swedelson on yesterday, one of your cohorts from VSiN. Von Tobel's here with us, Cofield, DeMond. And he said he just loves the Mavs in the playoffs. Is he joining a major crowd, especially in the series against LAC?
I know we exaggerate a lot. I'm not exaggerating. I have not talked to a single person that has picked the Clippers in this series. I haven't spoken to a single person.
What's the number in the series?
Mavericks are about a $1.20, $1.30 favorite. Now,
that has the number moved?
Yes. Clippers opened as a $1.25 favorite.
Okay.
I can understand to an extent because there are questions as to whether Kawhi Leonard's going to be available. He is questionable for the first game on Sunday. Shams reported cautious optimism about his status for the beginning of the series. I can understand it. Having said that, that's not really the tact that I have heard in terms of explaining why you like the Mavericks in this series. I've heard a lot of, I keep using the term, there's a Mandela effect going on here with this series. A lot of people think that Luka Doncic owns the Los Angeles Clippers, a team he is 0-2 against in the postseason when it comes to series, a team he has a losing record against. This is, it's wild. And let's say Kawhi Leonard plays. You know, Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, one of those two is going to have to guard one of Paul George, James Harden, or Kawhi Leonard. Like, that's just math. There's only five guys on the floor. There's plenty of stuff that the Clippers can do in this series to be a pain in the butt, especially if Kawhi Leonard, who, by the way, lest we forget, everybody and their mother last season was mocking them and going, oh, they're going to get destroyed by the Suns. Went out to Phoenix in game one and whooped that butt. And the Suns got lucky that Kawhi Leonard tore his meniscus in that first game because they were going to go out and win that series. Oh, and by the way, also, they did that without Paul George in that series too, by the way. Paul George was never available in that series. Like, this team's a lot better than they're given credit for.
Damon, you ready to bet it?
I want to go with JVT because Dustin was just too confident in the Mavericks to me. And I love that you mentioned that Mandela effect because I do think with those playoff series that since Luka was going off, people just think that they won them.
Yes. And no, people. No, I agree. So, Damon, I don't know if you've seen the clip. I think it was Grant Hill on NBA TV when they were talking about the series explicitly said, and Luka Doncic performed well in beating the Clippers in that series. They lost. Now, the clip – go ahead.
This is super inside baseball, but in this series, did Luka get one of the double bangs from Mike Breen?
Yes.
And people are like, oh, the only person to ever get a double bang besides Steph Curry from Mike Breen. That's the stuff that stays in people's minds.
Well, and I think that was the bubble year because they played in the bubble and then they played again, you know, in like the empty arenas or whatever it was. So, but like, and I kind of understand it to an extent because the second time they played, the Clippers were down 3-2 in Dallas. But Kawhi Leonard scored 46 freaking points in Dallas, destroyed them, and then they went back to L.A. and they closed out the series. Kawhi Leonard has dominated this team. So I'm just amazed by, like you said, and that's the other part about it. It's not even just that I haven't talked to anybody that thinks the Mavericks or the Clippers can win it. It's the overwhelming confidence of, like, they're just going to walk in and wipe the floor with the Clippers. I'm amazed by the overwhelming confidence. It's insane. By the way, Paul George in his last eight games, averaging 25-5 on 50% shooting, 50% from three. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, Treasure Island, here on a Friday. Come in this evening, check out the NBA, check out the baseball right now, 47-37. Heat on top of the Bulls. Excellent menu here. They got all the memorabilia. They got, like I said, 55-plus TVs. We've got two high recommendations on the chicken salad. No one recommends chicken salad. But the chicken salad sandwich, and we know Salerno can eat. And then there's the other side, a wall of a man, a rock of a man, Jed. Loves it. They've got Loco Moco in two styles.
That's your thing, yep.
Willie, and so am I, onion ring guy. I sent out a picture of the onion rings earlier. I mean, come on.
Looks good.
I'd never had the wings here. They were very generous last week. Oh, I should I tell the story and get myself in trouble? Damon, you got any questions about the wings?
Well, I would have them answered if you guys would have shared last week.
Yep. It was actually a couple weeks ago. We got so many wings, I stuffed them all into a to-go box. And as I'm driving home, I'm like, oh, let me go over to the station. And I was like, no. Man, those reheated in the air fryer, Damon. I'll have to get you some.
Okay, Mateo's right there. Mateo's coming back.
After we work, and maybe a couple Fridays from now, I'll get you some wings. I'll bring them in. But the wings were awesome. I'm a big fan of the Southpaw chicken tenders.
Yeah.
So
I got an idea.
They know what they're doing here.
How about DeMont? You know what, DeMont? You should get the wings after you pay me for the bet that you owe me.
Oh, no, there's still a lingering bet? What is this one?
He thought it was all over. He thought because I was on the new shift, he's like, thank God, I'm never going to have to do this.
Was that Bears-Packers?
That was, Bears-Packers. It was also, what's the other one? Do you remember the other one?
Two bets you haven't paid off?
It was the Titans finishing position in the AFC South. I took under 2.5. I gave him 2.5.
Let me explain myself. I was so ready to give those Red Bulls, but you never came in studio, buddy.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
A lot of Chicago sports to break down. Bears, big deal in the NFL draft. Bulls playing right now. Cubs off to a good start. And believe it or not, I need to talk some DePaul basketball. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. But Zach Zaidman, one of the voices of the Cubs. I never texted you or congratulated you on that right out of the gate. So good job, buddy.
Thank you very much. What's up, Steve? How you doing?
That's a big deal. John is here with us, John Von Tobel, who's one of our great co-hosts. Everything's good here. How was the game today?
Another win for the Cubs. They've won 5 of 6. John, by the way, how you doing? Pleasure to be talking some sports with you. Cubs are looking good. I think what's impressed me about the early going of the season, and now 12-7 tied with the Brewers for first place in the National League Central, is that they've managed to tread water, missing their top starter. Justin Steele, the all-star from last year, got hurt on opening day. He's basically out until May. And they're missing their best hitter, Seiya Suzuki, who was on fire the last couple of months of last season and in the early going of this season before he went down with an oblique injury. So they've been able to navigate through those injuries, keep finding a way to win. They got one of their starters back today in Jameson Taillon, the former Pirate and Yankee, made his season debut and looked good out there as he returned from a back injury, 5 innings, giving up just 1 run on 3 hits. And as they start to get healthy, I think they can be a very scary team in the National League Central.
What makes this lineup so good? Top 10 away to runs created plus. A lot of the offensive numbers look awesome. Why have they been so effective?
Everyone contributes. I think let's start with that. And I mentioned they're missing Suzuki, but other guys have stepped up. They acquired a first baseman from the Dodgers during the offseason by the name of Michael Busch. He was one of the Dodgers' top prospects. Pacific Coast League MVP last year, almost hit 30 home runs for their Triple-A team. He was the Dodgers' minor league player of the year. But with Freddie Freeman at first and Max Muncy at third, there really was no room for him on the Dodgers. So he ends up with the Cubs, who had a glaring need at first base. And he's been lights out, hitting better than .300. He recently went on a tear in which he hit home runs in 5 consecutive games. He's got 6 bombs so far this season. So he's been one of those guys. Cody Bellinger, coming off the resurgence last year, is starting to heat up again. He's going through a 5-game hitting streak, had 2 more hits today. Dansby Swanson, you know what he did in Atlanta. He's done that with the Cubs. Nico Horner, their second baseman. There's a lot to like about just the different offensive weapons that they've got. No one spectacular, just a bunch of solid players up and down the lineup.
Zach Zaidman on Cofield and Company. All right, what's the vibe? I mean, we've known that Caleb Williams should be the guy, 99% going to be the guy. What's the vibe around town? I think people have tried to tear him down a little bit, talking about, you know, he's had it too easy. Is he really a Chicago guy? What's everyone feeling about their new quarterback, we think, in Caleb Williams?
My prediction is by this time next year, there are going to be a whole bunch of school children in Chicago that paint their nails navy blue and orange, because he's going to be doing things that this city has really never seen in the Super Bowl era. They've never had a legitimate franchise quarterback outside of Jim McMahon when he was healthy in the 1980s. This is a city that went bonkers the last couple of years because of a number of splash plays each game that Justin Fields would make. Even though he couldn't play the kind of football you need to win, Caleb Williams is the kind of guy who can give you an incredible number of splash plays every game and win football games. I think that combination is really what's been missing. And the other thing is, I think Ryan Poles, their general manager, has done a really nice job over the last couple of years of beginning to construct an infrastructure where a young quarterback can come in here and succeed. Now, I'm not one of these guys that's going to call him the next Patrick Mahomes, even though you can see some of the tendencies, because you don't compare anyone to Michael Jordan. I'm not going to say he's the next Aaron Rodgers. but there are aspects of his game that remind you of both quarterbacks. Now, the question is, can you harness that? Is there enough here where, from a coaching standpoint, you can elevate his game to that next NFL level? I think there is, and what I do like more than anything else is they put stuff around him where it's going to be really hard to fail if he brings the same kind of talent that you saw week in, week out at USC here with the Bears.
Zach Zaidman, voice of the Cubs, is with us, was on the Bears beat for a long time. How long were you the sideline reporter?
15 years with the Bears before I moved to the Cubs. So there's a little bit of football left in me.
You're old. Do they use the second first-round pick on Brock Bowers? Do you go offensive lineman? I always favor offensive lineman over tight ends. But as I mentioned the other day to this audience, I'm very battle-scarred, as you are probably too, with tight ends back in the day of the Jets repeatedly drafting in the first round. It makes me very nervous. So what do you think they should do?
I think it's crazy to take a tight end in the first round. Just also when you look at it financially, it doesn't really make sense to do that. I think you always build inside out. So you can never be good enough on the offensive line. The Bears try to improve that a little bit this offseason. I don't think that the people that ripped the Bears offensive line when Justin Fields was the quarterback understand football, because I think part of the issues where the offensive line got blamed was because of the slow processing speed that Fields had as the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I think the league went out and showed that, because the Bears only got a sixth-round pick for him because of that inability to quickly process what was happening. And that put the offensive line, I think, in a very difficult spot. So I think if you can get a left tackle that you deem special at number 9, then that's where you go. If there is a special wide receiver, and I know it's a draft that's deep at the wide receiver position, but if there's a wide receiver that you deem really special that's available at 9, like if Roma Dunze is available at 9, maybe that's something that you consider. I think when I look at the number one needs that the Bears have, I would say you have to maximize what Montez Sweat gives you in terms of pass rushing at one end of that defense. It's a really good defense. But what that defense is missing is a complementary piece around Sweat. So all the attention that's paid to him, you want someone on the other side that makes you pay for the over-attention to Sweat. They don't have that guy on this roster right now. If you feel you can get that at number 9, that's where you go. If you feel you can get a tackle that's better than what you've got, which very well may be the case, that's where you go. But depending on how things shake up above them, they may end up trading down. It's a very valuable pick. So I think it's too early to say what direction they go, but I think there are going to be a lot of options for them. I the best thing that happened to them is that they got this mulligan after essentially missing on C.J. Stroud last year. You know, they traded the pick, and I think they did that because they didn't foresee C.J. Stroud becoming the kind of quarterback he was last season for the Texans. And somehow they got even luckier because you got the number one pick again because Carolina was so bad, and now they have an opportunity to stabilize the quarterback position and get even better around that new quarterback.
Zach Zaidman is with us. Like we said, he calls the games for the Chicago Cubs. I'm going to put you on the spot here. We're not going to send this back to Chicago, and I don't want to get you in trouble. What do you like doing play-by-play of more, Major League Baseball or college basketball?
I like both. Okay. I mean, the cool thing is they don't really conflict with one another because I haven't seen DePaul make the NCAA tournament. I'd love to have that problem, and if it ever happens, then I believe I'll get to do a little bit of both. But they're both fun for different reasons. You know, the Bulls being in the play-in tournament right now is a big thing as well. This is a fun sports town, no matter which team is playing well. They support their teams even when things are going poorly. So when things are even if you have a glimmer of hope with any of the teams here, it's a really fun town to be in.
What do you think of the hire by DePaul?
I think they're going to win more than the 3 games they won this past season.
Bold.
Chris Holtmann, I thought, was a home run hire for where DePaul was. You know, when you're coming off just the awful stretch that they were in over the last 3 years, including this 3-win season this past year, it's tough to get somebody to come in here, especially with this new landscape where NIL is so important, and you're still trying to build the kind of on-campus practice facilities that some of the other schools in the conference have. The fact that Chris Holtmann identified this as a place that he wanted to be, a guy that has big-time experience. He's won everywhere he's been. I know the last couple of years things did not go well at Ohio State, but you know, he's back in familiar territory. Used to coach Butler in the Big East, had success there. Now coming over to DePaul, understands the landscape of what's necessary in this conference, and he's off to a running start in terms of getting a lot of shooters via the transfer portal. And I think that's what you need if you're going to win in college basketball today. You better have guys that can light it up from three-point territory, and that's something that DePaul really hasn't had in a very long time.
Jaden Henley's moving on from DePaul to UNLV, and I had seen him a couple of years ago as a freshman play a little bit for Minnesota in a head-to-head spot. What is Vegas getting in Henley?
They're getting a guy who's much improved from that person that you saw at Minnesota. You know, this past season, Henley, and it, again, this was a tough year for DePaul because very rarely does a coach get fired midseason. That's what happened with the Blue Demons. So Henley had to navigate through a coaching change. But in Big East play, and to me, I know only three teams got into the NCAA tournament for the Big East Conference this year, Steve, but the Big East, in my opinion, was one of the, if not the toughest league day in, day out in terms of competition. You know, I thought St. John's and Seton Hall and Providence got a raw deal not going to the NCAA tournament, and the way the Big East teams performed in the tourney kind of showed that. Well, Henley, and I bring this up, Henley led DePaul in Big East play, averaging 10.5 points per game. He's a point forward type. I think he's got a terrific body at 6'7", 200 pounds. He's a guy that can play multiple positions at the small forward off-guard spots. He can guard people. He's a good ball handler. And, you know, when teams apply that full-court pressure, I think it's crucial to have someone of Henley's size that can handle the ball. Where you'd like to see him improve is with the perimeter play, because as I mentioned earlier, very tough to win at a high level if you can't knock down perimeter shots. He's got the ability to take it to the hole and take it to the hole strong. If he can supplement that with some perimeter play, that's going to be his chance to take his game to that next level.
Last couple of questions, Zach. We appreciate the time because you worked today. You had a game earlier in the day, so cool deal you coming on. Zach Zabeman's with us. I'll mention to the audience that we used to work together back in the day in the late 90s. You left in what, 99 or 2000? Or 98?
I left in 99.
Okay. What do you remember about here? Because I often think, like, a lot of the generations around that was old Sports Fan Radio Network, that a lot of the people who used to live here don't really – do you have memories of it? And clearly it's changed a lot. I don't know if you've been here too much since. But what do you remember about Las Vegas?
Losing a lot of money. you know, when I first moved to Vegas,
I
was 21 years old. So it was awesome, you know. I learned how to gamble. I had an opportunity to work with Pete Rose, first job out of college, as his update anchor at the Sports Fan Radio Network. So I learned a lot about baseball, which ultimately helped me with the job that I currently have right now, because there are few people who know more about the game than Pete Rose, just in terms of talking ball. I learned a lot of other things about Pete Rose too, but I can't mention those on the radio. I also think that what I remember about Vegas back then, it was beginning to build, and you just knew that it was a sleeping giant when it came to professional sports teams. And I'm glad now that those pro leagues have begun to realize what a sleeping giant Vegas is. That's to me, the biggest difference. I mean, yeah, you know that it's ever-changing in terms of all the new casinos and hotels that get built and all the new clubs that seem to pop up every single year. But to me, what's changed Vegas is now you have the pro teams in the city. Now it's not missing anything anymore. And back then it was missing those pro clubs.
In closing, we got a weird deal here. I do like the pitch by the A's and state and local officials for Major League Baseball that will get good tourism for the A's games. But I think it's going to be limited to about 8 or 10 markets. Chicago is one of them. They will travel here to come to the games. Do you think Vegas can be a good baseball city? I'll just tell you, we're kind of a front-running city, and the Knights have set the standard of, like, hey, they come here, they win immediately. The A's are a very interesting puzzle to solve.
I agree with you that it's going to be a problem unless the team's really good, right? Yep. I mean, this Las Vegas is a city of champions. And you saw that, you know, when the Rebels were really good and had that dynasty going under Tark. That was treated like a professional team, but that's what it takes, right? You have to be consistently good in order to capture people's attention. So unless you put a product on the field night in, night out, that's competing for something big, I think it's going to be tough, and then you're going to rely on opposing fans coming in and making a whole big weekend out of it. I think that's initially what's going to happen, but ultimately it's up to the management of the baseball team to put together the kind of squad that competes for something big. If you don't do that, I think it's going to be really hard to generate the kind of enthusiasm in the city that you need. Don't you agree?
100%. I actually try to limit the talk about the A's on this show because we just hammer them. And I'm trying to be a little bit welcoming, but it's just been such a disaster. Actually, they're a little bit better this year, but it's all the stuff off the field and the lack of trust in ownership. We could go on with this forever. Zach, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. And like I said at the start of the interview, glad you're doing well, and good luck with the Cubs.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Be good.
There he is, Zach Zaidman. So the reason I was asking him, and I figured I'm not going to get into the conversation with him, but I was asking him about what he remembers about Vegas. Think about what it was like here. Now I'm trying to think of your ages. In 1999 when he left, I'm glad he saw it, that the market had potential to explode and get Major League Sports. I'm not sure I believe that at the time. But I always have to turn things to food. Zach reminds me of two places that are no longer. And what I mean by that, why he reminds me, is as young guys, we used to go and break bread, and we'd go to buffets and sit there and talk sports and bully each other and almost like practice. We were all kind of young guys in radio and sit there at a buffet for 3 hours, and it would be $11, and just eat ridiculously. One place we used to go to was the Fiesta, the original one on Rancho. Really good buffet. Gone. Sad. The other one I went to Boulder Station the other day, and Boulder Station used to have, and now the space is a food court in the back. I don't know if you ever go to Boulder Station.
Every once in a while, yeah.
The space they used to have a buffet in is now a food court. I hadn't been there in forever, and I was like, oh, that's a spot. There used to be a late night buffet. I think that started at 11 or midnight for $5. So you'd be there, when you're, whatever, I could do it now, but you'd be there from 1 to 4 in the morning just eating food and talking sports. So right. Cheesy memories. So I would love to pick his brain about, I think the White Sox are going to do to Oakland. Check that. To Chicago, what Oakland has done, what Fisher has done to Oakland. Reinsdorf is just a monster.
Yep.
He's going to rake them over the coals.
The product stinks. Their only bright spot so far this season was the guy who got lit up today in Crochet.
They're bad.
Nothing going on.
We had Xavier come on yesterday. Xavier Pope out of Chicago, and he's like, well, their attendance isn't as bad as the A's. He's like, they're averaging 18. Believe me, by the end of the season, if they're a 55-win team, there's gonna be a lot of games that are less than 5,000 in Chicago.
Yep.
But I think that's what he wants. Baseball owners, man. So many of them. Ugh.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Grab Bag time, T.I. 70-60 Miami on top of Chicago. 3 minutes left in the first. Check that. It's the third quarter, isn't it?
Yes,
I can't
definitely.
I'm looking at a TV that's too far away.
It's
my bad.
It
wouldn't be 70-60 in the first, because I was first quarter, first half. I don't know what the hell's going on.
In the first play-in game of the night. How about that?
I meant first something.
Yeah.
I was also trying to think of how I was coming back, and I wanted to lead into Damon. Damon, can we go back in the Zaidman conversation? I think a lot of the UNLV fans haven't been thrilled with the first two transfer portal entries. What do you think about what Zach, who calls DePaul games, said about Jaden Henley, who's coming to the Rebels from DePaul?
The one part that really stood out to me when he said he's got point guard skills, but that's the part for me where maybe if he can help DJ off ball a little bit, I would like to see what DJ could do more off ball this coming season.
How about just give DJ a break?
That's it.
Well, that's why they got Jace Whiting, who I think can play point guard. I like Jace Whiting. No one else. I mean, and it's mostly loudmouth negative people who are going to be chiming in on portal additions. And I knew this was going to happen. Everyone was going to get themselves all worked up because point guards from the city like Uzan and Kylan Boswell is not from the city, but he's connected to Kruger and Frankie Collins. They're all in the portal. You have stars in your eyes, and they're like, who the hell is this?
Yep.
I think they're trying to find parts and build a certain type of team. I do think they need some more scorers. The reason I like Henley is, Zach said, point forward skills, so he can handle the ball. He's got a body that's going to grow. He is long. But I'll tell you know, they're going to need someone to move into that Boone role, mm-hmm. Keelan Boone. Keelan Boone, as the season went along, was really freaking good.
It's awesome.
I don't know if they're going to find someone like that. That's hard. Mm-hmm. But that's where the I think most fans are hoping big splash is coming up a couple of times. So they got pieces now. My question every time there's a player in the portal that UNLV could consider, my first question is, do they defend? If they don't defend, they're not going to recruit them. It's just that's the culture he's building.
Sure. I mean, you've seen it the last few years as the season has gone along, the guys who are a little, we'll call them somewhat negatives on the defensive end, so their minutes dwindle.
They don't play.
Yep. You've got to be bought in.
Jackie Johnson was pretty good defensively, but he was inconsistent and he was small. So Whiting may not be the scorer, certainly isn't the downhill turn the corner guy, but he should be able to defend, and he's big and strong, a little bit older too. And I think the other one is Kruger. First couple of years, he looked around the league and he's like, they'd get beat up a little bit, they get smaller, and then you're like, we are so freaking small. I think he set forward after year two, and he's like, I will never be a small team again.
Right.
So they have a lot of bigs, and I still think they can add one more.
You look at the successful teams. Right? UConn, pretty big team. Purdue, pretty big team. NC State, pretty big team.
I really thought that the world was going to move, college basketball world was going to move to one in and four out, and instead the Mountain West Conference is moving more towards not necessarily true power forward and center, but like the goal is 6'6 and above, two position through the five.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to be big and long because, again, the entire league is building – to beat Boise State and San Diego State.
Yep.
I don't love it, but I don't know how you reverse it. You know? I don't know how you have one big guy and then bomb from three, but then on the defensive end, you're small.
Yeah. You gotta be versatile, too. Like, it's not just size and plotting and post-ups. You got to be able to switch. You got to be versatile. Some of your guys up front have to be able to go out on the perimeter every once in a while and defend at a high level. So,
back in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Devon, you want to recap what Dustin Sweetelson said about John Von Tobel and their weight loss bet, which started how long ago, John?
Ooh, like a month and a half ago?
Okay.
Yeah.
There were serious accusations lobbed your way.
They were, JVT, you have to defend yourself. He said that maybe you weighed in with maybe some weighted pockets. Yeah. You know, maybe that you didn't weigh in your true self, where your entry weight isn't true because you have lost a lot of weight fast. And he mentioned you might be on the O, the Zimp, as he calls it.
I mean, losing the weight really fast, one of us lost allegedly over 30 pounds in a month and a half. So I don't know about me losing a ton of weight really fast. We never agreed to not using PEDs. So even if I was on PEDs, that's on him for not putting it in the right.
Wow. So you might be on the Zemp.
No, I'm on
which
the C.
We've been calling it the O, but I like the Zemp better.
I'm on the C.
I don't know what that is.
Cocaine.
anything to win a bet. Sin City, baby. It
really kills the appetite, you know.
He also mentioned that your face is looking skinny. Steve, you're in person with him.
Yeah, that you lost a lot of weight. The weight came off the face first.
Well, I haven't seen you in a while. Do I look different?
Fat face. No, you look the same. It's not bad. I never said you had a fat face.
If I looked different also, Steve, I don't think would ever really say it either. So
I would. You know what the thing is? When you see someone all the time, I think you need to be away from them for like months. And then you're like, whoa, okay. I have confidence that you are going to lose weight. You are competitive. I think Dustin can do it, and he has a – this should be an easy win for him.
Yeah.
He started 77 pounds heavier than you.
It's gonna melt off easy.
But the freaking summer – and then he's saying yesterday – I mean, he's very self-deprecating. He did a good job with this. But he said yesterday that he doesn't – well, he said when he first lived here, he didn't go outside. Like, you got to take advantage of the summer heat, and you got to be outside. You got to sweat without even knowing you're sweating.
100%.
That's awesome. Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Good for you.
Yeah. Got plans to take the kids out tomorrow, too. It's going to be fun.
Good times. Well, John got up very early today and is incredibly fresh at the end of the show. I appreciate that because he did a morning show on VSiN. Thank you.
You got it.
Mateo, thank you for the napkin, as I had disgusting sticky hands earlier, and I was creeping out our guest. Damon, very good job. Appreciate a good week of booking and running the show. And thanks to Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar for housing the show. Make sure to come down here this weekend, next week. Great, great place to watch sports. Great menu, good bar, 20-plus beers on tap. inside Treasure Island, free parking, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Have a great weekend.